back in on Canuck Central. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar. And keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. A lot of suggestions and ideas and theories coming in about Elias Pettersson. We'll try to hit some of those questions or some of the comments a bit later in the show. We have Lana Ferraro joining us later, plus Mailbag Friday coming up at 5:30. But before we get to all that, it's time to bring in our next guest. He is Mike Kelly from NHL Network and Sports Logic, and one of the brightest minds covering the game of hockey. It's always a pleasure having you on the show. Happy Halloween, Mike. And also, how are you enjoying the start of the season so far?
Hey, look, thanks for having me. And yeah, always good jumping on with you guys. It's been good. It's been fun. You know, some of the things I was looking into recently, just like overtime games, a ton of games are ending in OT, which is always way more fun than a shootout, in my opinion. We're watching some, you know, presumably good teams kind of fight it a little bit early. We're watching some surprise teams like Columbus and couple others that are doing pretty well so far. So October is always a little bit squirrely, and it's kind of fun to go in and see, you know, who you think's legit and who isn't, and see how it plays out.
Exactly. And you mentioned squirrely, and that's kind of how this fan base is feeling, especially after Canucks were lambasted last night by the New Jersey Devils 6-0, one of the worst losses we've seen on home ice since 2006. You can understand fans being on edge a little bit, but, you know, they still have 11 points in 9 games. But at the same time, they don't quite look like the same team we saw last year. So when you kind of see some of these early struggles, can you fault fans for being a little concerned, or is it too early to sound the alarm bells?
Well, look, I still think last year was a bit of an outlier. Like, they rode some percentages that are tough to do over the course of a whole year, and they did it. And in some ways, it kind of reminded me of Seattle in its second year, and then it crashed and burned the third year. I don't think Vancouver's going to crash and burn, per se, but did I expect a step backwards? Absolutely. I was also wrong, and I didn't think they'd be, you know, the kind of team they were last year either. So the truth's probably somewhere in the middle of the two. I think if you're a Canucks fan and you're expecting last season, odds aren't good. But, you know, they got a lot of talent on the team. They're not a bad team by any means. I just think that they're going to be a team that's probably closer to battling for a spot than they are battling for the top of the division.
In your mind, what were the adjustments that you would want to see from last year going to this year? Is it about rush opportunities? Because that has been a focus from the coaching staff.
Yeah, they don't have any.
Yeah,
And they didn't last year either. They scored. I mean, it was nuts. They scored on... They were up over 20% of converting on their rush chances. Not shots on net, chances. Mm-hmm. For a good chunk of last season. And, look, I was saying at the end of October, this isn't sustainable, when they were at about a quarter of their chances going in. And they kept that going for a long time, and it did peter off at the end. But you know what I find interesting, and like I always love talking to people like you and Canucks fans, and you know, I lived in North Van for a few years. I've got buddies and family there that are in it every day, right? Mm-hmm. The Canucks don't really generate anything off the rush. They're 30th in the league in rush chances, and they weren't near the top at all last year either. That was true under Travis Green, and now it's true under Rick Tocchet. And I know from talking to Travis Green, you know, when he was there at the time, they were trying to play a certain way to maximize what he believed were the strengths of the roster offensively. And it wasn't an up and down transition type game. So you can understand that. But the fact that two coaches now are maybe kind of seeing something similar, it's interesting. So the New Jersey game to me is, like I said, Vancouver's 30th in rush chances. They're 25th in rush chances against. You can't be that bad on both ends. You can not create, but also not allow.
Right.
That's okay, right? It's the differential that matters, and they're getting smoked. And New Jersey, by far, has the best rush chance differential of any team in the league. So is it shocking that we saw the kind of game we did last night? Not entirely.
Yeah, and I think that those are all very fair points about the team and how they would have to evolve, and also how they may have to tweak the roster as the season goes on. And one of the things that has really been in focus so far has been the struggles of some of their star players, and mostly a guy like Elias Pettersson. It's gotten to the point, Mike, and you know how rabid this fan base is, that, you know, fans really think that this guy not only isn't going to regain his form, but the contract's going to be an albatross, and people don't think he's going to turn it around. And in fairness, yes, it goes back to somewhere, what, the the midway point of last year where his struggles really started to happen. When it comes to evaluating a star player like him going through a prolonged slump, how do we kind of discern bounce back versus a player actually regressing?
Yeah, so I think it's fair in a sense because the slump, like you said, was kind of more towards the second half and then starting into this season. So it's a trend line that, we're following.
Mm-hmm.
Macro level, I mean, he had 102 points a couple of years ago. He had 89 points in 82 games last year. Like,
yeah,
it's not bad, right? And yeah, this year, I mean, just the one goal. And I don't know why, but the shot to me isn't the big threat that it was early in his career, the one-timer. And, you know, he's not really the driver on the line that he used to be of, getting the puck up, getting the puck in, skating around in the ozone, creating plays. He's more kind of find the soft spot guy, which is okay because Connor Garland, I think, has been doing a great job of that on that line and, helping Pettersson find quiet areas and where he can be productive. The other thing I'd say about Pettersson as well, and look, when you're paying a guy that much money, you need to score at least a point a game. Like, you need to be a guy that puts up points and as a driver. The defensive side of his game is fantastic. Like, he's a very active player defensively, blocking passes, stick checks, puck battle wins, like really high ranked in the league among forwards. So that's part of it where I'd say, you know, that's a plus that maybe gets overlooked. But yeah, the guy's got a score and he's not doing it.
So what is the biggest gap from last year to this year? Is it power play? Is it their, you know, their just regular offense, the non-rush opportunities? Because they're not really scoring at the same rate either right now.
No, they're not. Like I said, I don't know if I want to even call it regression because we're talking year over year.
Yeah.
There are some differences in the team. But, yeah, so, like, some of it is they wrote really high percentages in certain areas of their offensive game last year where you wouldn't expect it to continue. Like I said, I didn't expect it to continue for as long as it did last year.
Yeah.
And it did. Seattle rode that in their second year the entire way through in some ways. So it can happen. I look at Vancouver now, and you just surface level, you're looking expected goals scored. They're not far off from their process, which is kind of middle. So I don't know that we should expect this team to be a top five scoring team in the league. I don't.
Right.
And they might be closer to average. Like, Kevin Lankin has been a great story. The goaltending's been good. You know, you can imagine if and when Demko gets back in the net anytime soon, hopefully, that becomes a real strength of the team, and then you can start to win some lower scoring games. But like last year, they were 19th in expected goals. This year, they are 14th in expected goals. They happen to score at the sixth highest rate, and now they're just kind of closer to what that process indicates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Those are great insights on where the Canucks are. I mean, earned 9 games into the season already, but it is interesting looking at some other numbers too. You do see some similar trends to last year as well. So not a huge evolution quite yet with this team. And you mentioned off the top that early in the season, we see a lot of interesting results, and you kind of mentioned some teams that have caught your attention. I know it's early, but 9-10 games in, is there a team that has surprised you that you think has staying power as a real playoff team or contender?
Yeah, Washington. You know, there were people last year talking about, you know, should Spencer Carberry be up for the Jack Adams for what he did with the Capitals? And kind of my gut reaction, and this is to take nothing away from him because he did an incredible job, obviously, getting that team to where they got to. But, you know, that was a turtle race to see if anybody wanted the last spot in the East. It's not like Washington, you know, played amazing and got in. They were minus a million and made the playoffs last year. So this year, though, I mean, this team is legitimately good in the games that they played. Like, they're what's their record? 6-2-0, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, man, they're first in the league in expected goals against overall. Their goaltending's been okay. Like, they're not allowing much, and they're doing enough offensively. They're scoring goals. So is there some sustainability there? I think so, based on what we've seen so far. And I always look at that, especially in the first month. It's not just, you know, you could be 10-0, and I could find reasons if they're there to say, you know, I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but this Capitals team looks as good as a record.
Well, what's funny about that is, you know, the big acquisition was Pierre-Luc Dubois. And if you said that, hey, like the Capitals are re-emerging as being a, you know, traditional Eastern Conference powerhouse. It's because of that catalyst move. But it's been Dylan Strome. It's been Connor McMichael. Obviously, Ovi's still doing his thing with a couple of goals here. But it's been, you know, some guys that have just methodically worked on their game, and now they're age 27, age 24, and so some good seasons so far from Strome and McMichael.
Yeah, for sure. And like I think back, I remember hearing Patrick Kane talk about playing with Dylan Strome and how much he loved playing with Dylan Strome because of how smart he was, how good he was as a center. I mean, like he's not an elite center. We're not obviously putting him up there with the McDavids and McKinnons of the world, but like how often do we talk about Dylan Strome even being a great center in the league?
Mm-hmm.
And he is that. So Connor McMichael, I it seemed like every time I did a show at NHL Network last year and the Capitals were playing, I'm talking about Connor McMichael. Really skilled and young player, and he's putting up numbers this season. So yeah, those guys are driving the bus. Like John Carlson's looked great this season, which is a big plus. Pierre-Luc Dubois, I watched this guy in Columbus in playoff series physically dominate games, like take over games. It's in there somewhere, and it went away for a while, and coaches have tried to get it out of him. I know it's been a process. The Kings bet on it, and you know, they moved on early. If the Capitals can get some modicum of what that Columbus playoff Dubois was, that's a good piece to have.
Yeah, we've all been waiting to see that from Pierre-Luc Dubois. And honestly, I'd love to see it because you always want to see players figure things out no matter how things have gone for them. And I find for a player like Alex Ovechkin, who's off to a far better start this year than he was last year and ultimately ended up getting 31 goals, but he has 4 goals in 8 games. It really does supercharge his chances of getting that Gretzky record sooner than later, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, the Capitals upper brass had talked about this a few years ago. Like they're not going to rebuild this thing and tear it down because they want to surround Ovi with enough talent to do it. Is that the best way to, you know, have sustained success as an organization? I don't know. But I mean, I didn't think they'd be playing this well out of the gate either. So It's not like I know everything. But man, Ovi looks a hell of a lot better than he did early last season because, like, let's call a spade here. When the puck isn't on his stick, he's not doing a lot out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, defensively and all that, which is fine for where he is in his career and all that. But he certainly looks like he's got more jump. Like, I remember the start of last year. Like, I don't know if this guy can skate in this league anymore. He had a great second half. And he does look a lot better at the start of this season. And if this is kind of the trend line with him now where he can ramp up a little bit as he goes, if he's starting this well, I mean, yeah, we'll see where he ends up at the end of the year in terms of goals.
What's going on in Colorado in your mind? They start slow, get hot, now two in a row here on the wrong side. Are they just going to be a roller coaster team this year?
Guys, I think Jared Bednar is like two people away in the Rolodex from calling me to come play for them, which is terrifying if you ever saw me play hockey. They're beaten up to, oh my goodness, I feel bad. I was watching the game last night, and I'm like, I watched it for 10 minutes. And you know what? They had a good push after the early goal, so good for them. I have so much respect for Bednar as a coach. I know the way that he kind of thinks about the game, and he's very analytical in his thinking. You don't have to be a numbers person to be an analytical thinker, and he is that. And what he's got out of that team to this point, I give him such high credit for it. They had Shillington playing forward. They got guys that people have never heard of. They got Kakinen coming into play. It's a mess. They got to get healthy. And when they're fully healthy, when Gorgiev is a semblance of his normal self and average, if he can just be that, they're a real threat, I think, but they're so far away from that right now just because of the injuries. It's tough to say.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question too is, even when Nichushkin does come back, what is going to happen with him? And not to mention the situation with Gabriel Landeskog. But I did also want to ask you about the Utah Hockey Club a little bit, because they're a team that obviously is in a new city. They got off to a good start, then had some struggles since then, and they've been very active in the trade market. They traded for Ole Mata to shore up their defense after Sean Durzi went down with a long-term injury. What do you make of their start to the season, and do you think they can actually really push for a playoff spot this year?
Well, look, if they're healthy, I think so. I think they kind of showed that in their first few games of the year. They were playing a really kind of good brand of hockey and winning games, and the like Colorado, in a way, they got beat up a little bit, and they lost guys they really can't afford to lose. Like, Durzi's a huge one. They've got good young pieces there. But I think health-wise where they're at right now, it's probably asking a lot. If they're, you know, reasonably fully healthy, whatever, yeah, I think that's a good team that would be right in the mix for a playoff spot. But, yeah, they unfortunately kind of were dealt a couple of big blows early in the season.
We were having a chat on the show yesterday with Kevin Woodley about just save percentage going down, and we talked about it through the lens of the goalies. We'll flip it and put it through the lens of the skaters. Are you noticing any trends through the data from SportsLogic just about, you know, where shots are coming from or what chances teams are trying to look for nowadays?
Yeah, I haven't dug deep into that, to be honest. If you look year over year in the last kind of several, one of the reasons why save percentages are down, so it's not just goals, but how many shots are you stopping,
mm-hmm.
Is because the emphasis on quality just continues to go up. And if you look at like 2015-ish and year over year to today, you just see that trend line of save percentages and shooting percentages because teams place a lot of value on the quality of the shot they're taking. One of the reasons why they do that, and this is important, is if you take a what we call a bad shot or a very low percentage shot, you are statistically slightly less likely to recover your rebound than the defensive team is. So over and over and over again, bad shots actually, you know, equate to turnovers or loss of possession, which mm-hmm. I would call a turnover. They don't get marked as a turnover on the stat page on NHL.com, but that's what it is. And teams don't want to give the puck up. So that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, this is a long topic for another day, and Kevin Woodley would be way better to talk to than me. I think the goaltending position is overcoached today, honestly. I see a lot of, you know, when a guy goes here, you do this. If that happens, you do that, as opposed to reading and reacting. I've talked to goalies currently and formerly in the last, you know, year or so, about something that we never really talk about with goalies that they've all told me is so important, is hockey sense. Just the ability to read a play, to read a rush,
mm-hmm.
And anticipate that next play. I think it's gotten kind of robotic, and, you know, shooters are smart. Players are more skilled now than ever. Like, how many times do we see them pick corners short side on the goal line? So I think it all plays into it.
I'm curious, though, too, if the demand to want to hold on to the puck then more often is going to keep rising, which it seems like it should. What's the counter then for defenders? Are we going to go back to more classic defensive D-men, or are we going to get more mobile D-men to kind of push the tempo and push the urgency to want to make a play with the puck?
I think you need both. Like the template is, you know, don't leave good ice for bad ice. Don't go chase guys around.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams want to pressure in the defensive zone, and that's great. The amount of skill that top teams have today, they'll make three quick passes and pick you apart if you're not careful. So you see a lot of teams that just give up the perimeter. And they say, I mean, Barry Trotz was famous for this when he was with the Islanders, and that team, I think, overachieved and went to two straight conference finals, almost went to a cup final. They would, and, you know, very surface level, if you're quote-unquote looking at analytics, you're like, man, the Islanders give up a ton of shots. They're not a good defensive team. They didn't give up any important shots. They would say, take those outside shots. So protect the middle of the ice. Like, that's, you know, the net front area, inner slot, as we call it at SportLogic. It's kind of diamond shape in front of the net up to the hash marks. It's where half the goals in the league are scored every year, and you got to get there. So if you're, whether that's a mobile D who's able to recover a loose puck and get it out, or that's a big bruiser who's able to knock you off the puck and force a loss of possession, as long as you keep guys out of that space, you're going to have success.
Mike, great stuff as always. I really appreciate your time. Really good insight into the Canucks and also what's happening around the National Hockey League. And we look forward to chatting with you again very, very soon.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Enjoy the games coming up. And
that is Mike Kelly, hockey analyst, NHL Network Sports on Prime, and also Director of Analytics and Insights on Sports Logic. Great stuff.
One of the best.
One of the best. Always fun chatting with Mike Kelly and some great insight on what's happening with the Vancouver Canucks specifically. And we mentioned how if you look at some of the shot metrics, the traditional numbers, the Canucks are very similar to last year. But also, you can tell that their rush chances they're giving up are more. And based on SportsLogic numbers, I mean, there you go. I mean, he essentially broke it down, and Woodley told us the same thing last night, yesterday, that the Canucks are giving up more rush chances than they were last year. Sports Logic has the same information. They're generating slightly more as in terms of expected goals, but they're giving up significantly more than they were last year.
The comp to the Seattle Kraken worries me a great deal.
Yeah, I mean... Yes. Do I think they're going to fall off the same way the Kraken did?
No.
I'm not there yet.
And Mike did kind of couch it that way as well.
He did.
But nevertheless, like it felt very obvious to me last year that there were reasons why the Seattle Kraken would slide.
For sure. And I think, we knew that this year, my whole take on this year's team was they're unlikely to have a more prolific year than last year because they just hit so many highs last season. But could they become a better functional hockey team for the playoffs? Mm-hmm. And get there. And like whether that's being a 100-point team or 98-point team or 104-point team winning the division or not, can you just be a better team come playoff time than you were last year? That to me is the goal of this year. I don't care too much about how you get there and how you do it. It's just be a better team come postseason time. But it was going to be hard for them to obviously replicate the same numbers that they did last year. The thing that is most concerning is they don't have the identity they had last year yet. And like Mike mentioned, it's okay to not create a lot of rush chances if you don't give up a lot of rush chances. It's about the differential. If you are generating more than you're giving up, that's the game, name of the game. Doesn't matter if it's 100 more or 10 more or like you generate 100 chances but give up 90, it's still 10 more than you generating 20 and giving up 10. You know, like at the end of the day...
Can you dictate the tempo of the game, right?
Exactly.
If you're
going to
play a low event, but can you still be on the right side of low event?
Yeah, and that can be a little bit boring, I get it. And come regular season time, it can be boring.
But is that your identity, right?
And one thing Woodley told us too, that last year the Canucks ranked amongst they were one of the worst teams generating rush chances. The team that was even worse than them, the Florida Panthers. They won the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? They still generated more than they gave up. They were great defensively. And come playoff time, they played playoff hockey and they won. So this team needs to be better defensively. Like ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Like we can sit here and talk about the star players too. Yes, they have to score more and be better. But in terms of under the hood, the foundation of this hockey team, last year was built on it being a strong defensive squad. Until that comes back, this team is going to have a hard time being consistent.
Yeah, it's the battle that they're going to be facing. And, you know, off of yesterday and the sobering look that you get to look at it today, that's the element, man. Like, that's the thing. It's for me, the beginning of the season, always chasing your identity. And I'm still not sure we've seen what this year's version of the Vancouver Canucks are meant to be.
And you hear this from teams, from coaches and players, that identity doesn't carry over year to year.
No, not at all.
Your staples, I guess, the tenets of how you play, they can remain the same. But until you establish your identity, you don't have one again. You have to establish it again. And the Canucks have yet to establish their identity. We know what they want to be. We know what they can be. But they've yet to establish that this season.
It's something as simple as two as fundamentals. Right, the game always is going to come back to fundamentals. We can play at different tempos. We can expose different parts of the game and showcase what teams are trying to do tactically and create chances. But ultimately, you have to have good fundamentals within those tactics. Building identity still requires fundamentals. And the things that we chat about that Rick Tocchet brings up of like chipping the body and all these things. Man, they didn't do any of that last night.
Last night was, again, there was nothing for them to redeem from last night. There was no redeeming quality or like, hey, at least you played to your identity or at least you did this. I mean, there's so many nights last year, and I remember this towards the end of the season where fans got mad at me for saying, why do you think this team is going to be fine in the playoffs? I'm like, their identity is there. They're not scoring. They have to get better at things for sure, but they still have an identity and they're good defensively. And they've been better defensively. But then they're not doing those things. So I can't sit here in good conscience and be like, yeah, they're going to be fine. It's like, you got to prove it. And they've yet to prove that so far this season. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll pose a lot of these things to our next guest, Landon Ferraro. He's coming up right here on Canuck Central.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour two of Canuck Central. If you missed the first hour, you can check it out on the podcast. We dissected the Canucks' start to the season, Elias Pettersson in the open, and then looked under the hood when it came to the numbers and the process for the Canucks so far this year. Mike Kelly from SportsLogic and NHL Network, so check that out on the podcast if you missed it. But now it's time to welcome in our next guest on Canucks Central. It's Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar. And Landon Ferraro, a good friend of the show, joins us like he always does every Thursday. Always a pleasure having you on the show, Landon. And, you know, last night, you know, we saw the Canucks have one of the worst home performances in 20 years. And when you're a team coming off such a comprehensive loss and you don't have any real redeeming qualities about what happened, like, how do you respond as a team and how hungry are you to play again after a drubbing like that?
It's one of those situations where, like, as soon as that horn goes at the end of the third and you get back and you sit down in your locker, you're just sitting there thinking, like, can we just play again? Like, we could do it right now and it wouldn't be that bad again, right? Like, so it's almost one of those, well, you almost hope it's, you know, a rock bottom moment, and it makes everyone kind of look at themselves and say, you know, hey, guys, like, you know, coach had been saying, you know, some habits are creeping in here, and it could always lead to a bit of a losing streak. Well, we just got, you know, kicked in the butt pretty good here, and how about we fix it right now? Like, we don't need to go on a full little losing streak to realize that we can be better and have to be better.
I tried looking this up, so I'm going to take you down memory lane here to February 10th, 2016. You would have woken up fresh off of a LA Kings 9, Boston Bruins 2. You were even on the night, though, so you were awesome. What do you do the next day after a loss like that?
Well, sadly for me, I had to go walk around downtown Boston with my mom and brother because they had just come into town afternoon to watch the game and hang out. So I, you know, had to quickly move on. But no, you know, it's, again, like, it's a situation where you're sitting there after the game and then you get into practice the next day and you do a bit of video, and it's, you know, in our instance, it was, you know, literally like one clip of each part that Claude Julien wanted to talk about. It wasn't a 45-minute thing showing mistakes all over the place. Like, you know, that's something that happens more so in junior because you need to see, you know, the repetition of bad habits to really get into your head that, hey, our coach might actually be right and we should probably listen. You know, like, professionals, though, like, as soon as they see it, like, they don't even need to see the video. They already know what's on it. They know that it wasn't good enough, and they know that individually they have more. So it's just a reset, and you have to, you know, just say, like, that is our worst. We need to move.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would expect we see better on the road, at least I would hope so. And as far as, you know, what we've seen from this team so far this year, as much as last night was a big concern, there was also some trends that we've seen so far this year, giving up rush chances, not generating enough. We just spoke to Mike Kelly, who broke down the numbers that the Canucks are giving up far more rush chances near the bottom of the league, whereas they're also near the bottom of the league in generating rush chances. So they're not even able to execute on some of the stuff they worked on in training camp to generate more off the rush. Last year, they're one of the best teams at defending the rush. Like, what do you make of that discrepancy and how this team is still kind of struggling to find that middle ground?
You know, I think we're starting to get into the season enough. Like, there's been enough games played where you can start to see what is going to work for this group and what's not really working for the group. And, you know, the idea of adding more layers of offense and specifically on the rush are all great ideas. And yes, that would be nice if it works. But if the team doesn't work that way and it's not really gelling, well, then maybe we have to look at something different. And, you know, you can go back to last year and say, and it did show, like, the offense, you know, dried up a little bit come playoff time and as it gets harder. But they were also a very good team that seemed to really enjoy and embody the way that team played. And right now it feels like with this team this season that they're trying to do and be something that's just not quite there, right? Like, it's, I don't know how you feel about it, but, like, it just doesn't look like the rushes are going to be there if you're trying to force it consistently. Like, just go back to playing very solid D, make sure it's solid there first, and now you're coming out as a unit. Yeah, there might not be a 3-on-2, but you you work better as a group. Like, I feel like this Canuck team needs to be a really good, solid group of 12 forwards and 6D every night. It's not like other teams where one player can take over when things aren't quite working.
We chatted about that in the first segment of, you know, the intention was to be this rush team. And it'd be one thing if they, you know, still adhered to it and were failing because of it, but it doesn't even look like they're creating enough rush chances. And we were just chatting with Mike Kelly, who kind of detailed that is very similar to what they were last year. And that's where I wonder, you know, and it's still, you know, we're talking about early part of the season. Did they already fail the plan rather than letting the plan fail them?
Yeah, a little bit. Again, like, I just don't, you can't be what you're not. And I'm not saying that this won't work, but we're starting to get far enough into the season where, you know, like, they've had enough time to work at it through training camp, practices. You're now into the season. Like, at what point do you draw that line and say, this isn't working? I'm not saying it needs to happen right now, but I guarantee those conversations are happening behind closed doors.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of my questions, though, usually is about these things. If you have to change your plan that quickly, does that show any level of distress? Again, I'm not trying to make this into like this dramatic thing. I just think about this all the time. I heard players talk about this, that when somebody presents a new plan, you also don't want to see them walk it back that quickly. Is that also something that a coach has to be aware of when they ask teams to do something, that you also have to give it a good amount of time before you start changing tactics again?
I think that is something that it's totally different in each situation and each coach with his team. You know, if it's a new coach and he hasn't, you know, earned the respect or trust of all of his guys yet, yeah, I think it's a harder situation to where, you know, he's coming in and say, we're going to do this, and then all of a sudden he's like, okay, no, we're going to do this. You're like, what? This guy doesn't, we can't make up his mind. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case here in Vancouver. Like, you know that these players want to be playing here. They want to play for Rick Tocchet. Like, he has their respect and trust. If he has a meeting with them and he walks them through, showing them clips of things that he doesn't like, as, you know, in that part of the game, and then has a discussion with them saying, guys, I think we need to go back, you know, leaning a bit more to last year. You know, I think that's something the guys might even just, you know, nod along with and say, you know what, yeah, like, you know, I appreciate the fact that he tried something, like he wanted to improve, and that doesn't mean that we're not a good team because it's not working. It's just not right for this group at this moment, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a lot worse if guys are sitting there and they're not happy, and I'm not saying they're not happy with the system, but, you know, if they're sitting there and like, why are we not changing or trying to fix something? I think that's the bigger issue.
So after a game like that, and we can easily say, you know, something like, you know, back to the drawing board, but if we take that at face value and it means, you know, everything's up for debate here as far as who should play with who, you're a player in this spot after a game like that, are you coming into the next practice thinking, hey, like, this could all look different, and a line mate that I was meant to be developing chemistry with or have had chemistry with could be broken up after a game like that?
Yeah, like, this is definitely a day where you walk into the dressing room. And whether it's, you know, they put a lineup sheet up that's in the dressing room, or it's just the practice jerseys are already up and they have the colors of each line, like, you're walking in, and, you know, for me, I always walked in and, you know, I like to have a good chat with the guys in the morning, so I go grab a coffee, and then you go put your undergear on and stuff. Like, this is a day where you skip the coffee, you skip everything else, and you kind of find your way to wherever that lineup is to see, because you just don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, and when it comes to individual players too, and as much as we're talking about team system wise, I think a lot of these concerns would not be as big if some of their star players are playing at their best, especially Elias Pettersson. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, it seems like we have this conversation every time that we have you on the show, but it's the big story with the team too. And I'm kind of tired of asking about where is his game, do you think he's going to break out, more about, if you start going on a prolonged slump like this, like, what's the best thing for a player to try to do just for themselves to just not lose it too much and not let the confidence get away from them even more than it has already?
Again, I think we were talking about it last week. Like, I think it's something where, like, he really needs to sit down with whoever his guy is with the Canucks, who he feels the most comfortable with, whether it's one of the coaching staff or the extended with the Sedins. Like, whoever his guy is, I feel like he needs to sit down and come up with, like, his couple things that he needs to focus on. And for me, looking at him, and it, you know, very likely would be he would pick different things to focus on, but for me, looking at him, like, he needs to be making sure, like, okay, I'm moving my feet tonight, I'm using my body in the right way, meaning, you know, like, when he's at his best, like, he is physical, and that's not running guys over, but he uses his body to protect the puck, buy some time for himself, like, he is good at that reverse hit. Like, all those things have not really been in his game right now. So, like, move your feet tonight, use your body, and make a play, but be direct with it, right? Like, that play last night on the power play at the end of the period where he gets it and he, like, he almost freezes trying to decide what to do. Like, a Pettersson that is confident is taking three hard strides and absolutely ripping that wrist shot that he has, right? Like, there's a clear disconnect between his ability and his confidence right now.
You know, the reverse hit that you mentioned, he's been doing it for years, ever since he's come into the league, and it's worked to some degree. The version that we've seen this year, he's really signaling it early, and there's been moments when it felt like he could make a play on the puck rather than go be physical, which is, it's nice to see to want to take that initiative to be physical, but he's almost telegraphed it and players have made passes around it that at that stage he's no longer really influencing the puck.
And I think that's just another example of him just not confident in his abilities. Like, when your game's not there, and I'll speak personally now, like, when my game wasn't there, I was always like, okay, I need to finish every check. I need, every time I get a shot, it needs to be the hardest shot. Like, you bear down so hard on every play. So, like, I can almost picture Pettersson as he's going to do the reverse hit where, Bick, like, you are right. Like, it is pretty telegraphed right now. Like, I can almost picture him in his head saying, like, okay, I'm going to make sure that I'm hard on this.
Right. Puck.
Like, everything, so it's like he gives himself an extra half second to make sure that his feet are planted and he's stronger on his feet. Well, that just gives the other guy, who also is a very good NHL player, he sees it, he takes one step, and he makes a pass. Like, it's the same way on the reverse when Pettersson's going. Like, he sees the defenseman, and he knows, okay, if I make a move to my left, he's going to cross over, and as soon as his foot crosses over, I have him on the right side. Like, it's the same exact thing. So, like, it's, that's where, again, when a player is playing at his best, like, there's no thought process. He just naturally goes. Mm. And that's where things look faster and more direct. But when you're trying to make, you know, make yourself better and get out of a bit of a hole that you're in, like, you start overdoing everything. Yeah. And it ends up accomplishing less.
Yeah, and you know, we had Mike Kelly on, and I thought he made a good point. This is also one of the things I've always thought about when I looked at Connor Garland playing alongside Elias Pettersson. And Pettersson's obviously struggled so much that it makes total sense to have Garland on his wing, and he's a real driver. But we haven't seen Pettersson be a driver, and they're very similar. I mean, they're not similar players, but they're both very puck-dominant guys that like to really, you know, control play and be in the middle of doing everything, whereas now on that line, Pettersson's trying to find the soft spots, open the open space, instead of being the guy that's really in charge. And for now, I get it, he should play with Garland, but long term, we just need to see him on a line too, where he can be the guy that drives play. He has to do it himself, but I'm not even sure that this duo is something that can really stick and has sustainability beyond maybe trying to get Pettersson going.
You know, I don't disagree with you by any means, but I do think at a certain point, your highest paid player and your most skilled player, like, you look around the league, like, what do you think of when you think of Nikita Kucherov? Like, he demands the puck. You look at around the league, like, all the best players, like, they demand the puck when they're on the ice. And right now, like, Pettersson, it doesn't look like he demands it. Like, even on the power play, not to switch over from 5-on-5, but even on the power play, kind of moves around and kind of meanders. Like, there's no, like, sprint to a spot, and then he has his, you know, his stick, you know, cocked up ready for a one-timer or to receive it to make the next play. Like, guys notice that. When someone's just kind of moving around the zone, you don't feel urgency to get them the puck. But when you know that the guy's sprinting to a spot, you're like, oh, he's open. Like, he's now drawn my attention. I have to give him the puck, right? Like, I think that's a real big difference. For other guys that are, you know, paid much less and have smaller roles, you can talk about, you know, I need my other guy to be doing this or that a little bit more, because you don't have the skill set to just do it yourself and drive a line. Where Pettersson's game was at and was signed for, like, there's, you know, it is a bit harsh, but I don't think there's really excuses anymore. Like, you've signed the contract, you got what you wanted, you need to do your part now.
Okay, is this a thing? Quinn Hughes last night handled the puck on his stick for 3 minutes and 47 seconds, which is, you know, we don't have historical data, but we check it every game. It feels like it was one of the highest ones we've ever seen, if not significantly higher than anything we've ever seen. Is there such a thing as having the puck too much?
Oh, for sure there is. And, you know, like, Quinn clearly wanted to have a good game last night. You know, his brothers are in town. Like, it's an important game for him. And just from the get-go, it just didn't quite look right either. And when that's kind of going on, where it just was, like, nothing looked easy for him last night. And he was, you know, just even the play with JT Miller, like, yes, Miller shouldn't have dropped the puck, but when do you see Quinn turn his back completely to the play when he thinks that he could have a chance to get the puck, right? Like, just everyone was off last night. And then you add in that he had the puck basically every time he's on the ice, and it's on his stick. Like, that's just opening yourself up for more and more to be, you know, not quite right.
All right, we got to leave you on a fun one here on Halloween. We're having a debate here in office. Which Halloween candy box is the best?
Whichever one has a Reese's peanut butter cup in it. I don't even care about the rest.
Good answer.
That's all that matters.
That's a good answer.
Put it this way. We bought our Halloween candy for our place here to hand out, and I might have had to go get another bag of peanut butter cups because they didn't quite make it past day two in the house.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's a regular move. It's a regular move.
It's a good one. Yeah, so you're all about the Hershey's one then, the Reese's, the O. Henry, and the Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, and again, like, I'll eat the other stuff, but it's one of those, I just want the peanut butter cup, and it's the best candy out there.
See, that's the way to do it. Josh is going on about the box that has no mistakes in it. It's just, you're getting a solid chocolate bar every single time, rather than going for the peak of exactly what you want.
Yeah, you know, you can't have everything all at once. I'm just happy. Just give me the peanut butter cups, and I don't need any other. I have no other complaints. No, nothing else to ask for. I'll happily go sit on the couch by myself at that point.
I honestly, quality is always better than quantity. I'd go with good, high quality than just the average quality across the board. But hey, to each their own.
To bring this even a little deeper here, like, the most important part of it is, with the peanut butter cup, is all the holidays. They get those bigger ones, you know, the Christmas tree one.
Yeah.
A way better ratio, too. Not that I've thought about this too much at all.
No.
Right?
I mean, we only spend half our time thinking about useless things, but hey, that's just kind of life, I suppose. Landon, always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
Yep, sounds good, guys. Have a good one.
That is Landon Ferraro. A good insight, as always. And you would imagine when it comes to Halloween candy, people have opinions. Shiloh says, reefers peanut butter cups.
Well played. Well played. I put out the tweet because it's mailbag. We'll do it on the other side. But, you know, there's the black box, which Snickers, Twix, Mars, M&M's. And then there's the Cadbury box with caramel, Mr. Big, Crispy Crunch, Wonder Bar.
Wonder Bar, by the way, underrated.
Oh, so underrated.
Okay. So underrated.
Big doesn't know about Wonder Bar.
I don't know if I...
You probably have tried Wonder Bar.
I don't know if I have.
You probably don't remember, but I'm sure you've had
Wonder Bar. Do you want
Wonder
me to
Bar.
Go get you one in the break here?
If we got time.
I can leave. I'll leave right now. I'll come back.
If you leave right now, okay,
yeah,
sure.
Here.
All right, I'll try that here. And then there's the Red Box, the Nestle Box, Kit Kat, Coffee Crisp, Aero, and Smarties.
Is Josh going to buy candy?
And then there's the Hershey's. I think he actually is.
He's not kidding. He's like walked out of the studio.
Well, the thing is, Josh is like, we underrate his athletic prowess. He's just going to hustle over to London Drugs, in, out, be back.
He is gone.
He's gone. Like he's out of here.
He's gone.
You know what? You know what? It also shows Arash that he has the utmost trust in you. He left you the controls and walked out of the studio. Yeah. So yeah. It shows good belief and trust.
Yeah. Thanks for believing in the Persians. We've been waiting. Thank you.
Finally,
we get our time.
Building trust.
Building trust. Hey, we talk about trust. That's what, you know, life is all about, trust, man.
Canucks right now don't trust the system right now, and no rush opportunities, and Josh rushing out of the studio right now, trusting in his coworkers.
You want to talk about good details? That's we got it right here, man. I'm
embracing the heart right here.
Dude, I'm just saying, like, if he comes back only with candy for Bic, I'm going to be slightly pissed off.
Yeah, I think he'll. I believe in Josh.
Okay,
I think we've taught him well over the years.
I'm actually very concerned all of a sudden because you're probably right.
No, I think Josh.
Text in 650.
Josh is a married man now. He's, you know, he has.
Do you think
to be
Josh will be considerate and bring enough candy for the whole class here?
I think he will. I believe in Josh. J Dog to Carhog says Score's the best. Score. I'm a big Score fan, by the way.
But does Score come in like an assorted box?
I don't know. I can't remember. But I'm saying he likes Score.
Who's pumped up when they get Score at Halloween trick-or-treating?
I was.
The kids with a dental plan? Probably.
The kids with the dental plan. But like, between all the things, you go to the house that has Score, you're like, dude, seriously, Score?
Yeah, Score. So, I mean, growing up in Sweden, they had a candy called Dime, which was just like Score. But
do kids like Score or do adults like Score?
I was a kid and I loved Score. I loved it because it reminded me of my childhood Dime, which is like very much like Score.
Is it the one in IKEA?
Yes. They have the smaller versions, but like if you get the bigger bars in Sweden, like they're far better than the little ones. But yeah, very similar to Score. So that's why I have an affinity for Score.
Does Score have commercials? I feel like I've never seen a Score commercial.
Score commercials, yeah.
Which is just the vibes of the chocolate dripping on. Whereas, like, you see a Snickers commercial.
Obviously, Score is not on the same level as Snickers. You know, it's like comparing, like...
That's what I'm saying.
You know, from President's Choice Cola and Coca-Cola. It's not the same, obviously.
From a commercial level, I feel like it's easier to sell a Snickers to the kids, M&M's to the kids.
I'm just saying I like Score. That's all I'm
sure.
saying. I mean, sure. Yeah, of course.
But we're talking about trick-or-treaters here. Which box is best to get? I don't know if I'm reaching for the Score box.
I'm
not trying to get my front door all egged up here with the Score. Not that you should do that, ladies and gentlemen.
Planet JDF, the Nestle box is stacked top to bottom. No weakness in the lineup. The Nestle box is solid.
Well, Smarties is in there. That's weakness.
I like Smarties.
Oh, you can't trust people that like Smarties. Like M&M's exist. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to try Smarties.
I mean, M&M's and Smarties. Yeah, M&M's are better, but I don't mind Smarties. Smarties are fine. All right. We'll get to more of your questions and comments coming up for Mailbag Friday on a Thursday. That's next on Canuck Central.